Vous écoutez Résonance FM 104.4, l'art d'écouter le bruissement de l'ombre.
This is The Bike Show here on Resonance FM with me, Jack Thurston. Well done to everyone who braved the rain for Velonotte in London on Saturday night. It was desperately bad weather. I mean, it couldn't have been worse. Midsummer rainstorm for the entire ride. But everything else went to plan, apart from the Olympics having closed off the Greenway. And Sergei tells me that he's keen to come back next year to do it again. So that's great. Well, as you probably know, the Tour de France begins this coming weekend, and that's the subject of this week's show. Well, in a manner of speaking, Kieran Yates, regular contributor to the show who lives in Paris, and I spent a little time sharing our experiences of touring by bicycle in France. That's a Tour de France, isn't it? Every year we see on our television screens the Tour de France and the beauty of the French countryside and the wonderful towns and cities that the cyclists in the Tour de France pass through. And it's almost impossible to watch that if you're me without thinking, why am I not out in France doing a cycle tour? Because it's such a great country to go cycle touring in, isn't it?
It certainly is. It's allegedly the most visited country in the world, and it's also the country that is most visited for cycle touring. And I think part of the reason for that is the range of countryside that's available. You've got high mountains, you've got forests, you've got beautiful lakelands and gentle rolling scenery. And it's also got, in summer certainly, a very pleasant climate for touring.
So let's take France as the hexagon and start with the bit that's closest to the UK, the bit that's easiest to get to, and then we'll work round. Let's go anti-clockwise round the hexagon, starting from the, you know, Pas-de-Calais. It's actually a bit dull over there, isn't it? Because you've got this, well, you've got Kent and Sussex, which is incredibly beautiful and hilly and lovely cliffs and lakes and things like that. And then you go across to Calais or Boulogne, and around there it's very flat and austere and not too much fun. Or am I being unfair?
I think it's a reasonable assessment. If you are going anti-clockwise around the hexagon, then starting from Calais, you'll head off towards Boulogne, and there's some kind of wooded areas in between the two towns. And then further on from that, it does get rather monotonous, rolling up and down countryside, which is mainly farmland, and strong winds to contest with as well.
But once you get to Normandy and then Brittany and that bit, that's real beautiful countryside, isn't it, really? Oh, there's certainly a lot of it around, particularly the coastal bits, and great food, great, you know, lots of apples and cream to eat in Normandy, and then lots of shellfish in Brittany.
And a nice bottle of Calvados to wash it all down with.
Yeah, indeed.
It's got the cuisine, a very great cuisine in that part of France, and slightly more severe terrain in terms of the ups and downs, but it's not mountainous. It's rolling, wooded, and a very pleasant area to be in, although in terms of climate, it suffers a bit.
It's a bit windy and wet.
Windy and wet.
But it's never going to be as bad as Devon or Cornwall. I mean, it's like, it's a bit, I find Brittany is a little bit like Devon or Cornwall, but, you know, a little bit further south. So you're going to get more or less the same kind of thing, but it's going to be a bit warmer and a bit nicer, and and there are fewer people there, so the beaches are emptier, and obviously the seafood is much better.
Yeah, yes. I think the Bretons themselves say that they experience a year's worth of seasons in each day, so that gives you an idea that you're going to be experiencing wind, rain, sunshine, everything in a day, perhaps.
And this region of Brittany is quite easy to reach from the UK, because you can take the ferry down from Portsmouth or Plymouth, I think, either to Saint-Malo or Roscoff, which is on the far tip of Brittany. And then you're right there, and it's quite easy to put the bike on the ferry. You don't have to worry about packing it up for an air flight, and you can enjoy the trip on the boat.
Yes, it's very accessible, easy to get to, easy to return from. In terms of the big towns in Brittany, though, or Normandy and Brittany, I think Rouen is very beautiful, a beautiful city to visit. But then once you get beyond Rouen, I think Brest is interesting, but not particularly aesthetically pleasing. So, yeah, in terms of the great architecture of France, it's not necessarily in that part of the world.
OK, well, let's move a little bit further south. One of the tours that I would love to do, and I've not done it yet, is to take the ferry to Brittany and then basically ride across Brittany and then down the Atlantic coast to the border with Spain, and then take the ferry back from either Bilbao or Santander. It strikes me as a really nice journey. So let's take that tranche of the country south of Brittany. We're crossing over the mouth of the Loire River, and then heading towards Bordeaux. Well, it is Bordeaux, isn't it? And,
yeah,
and La Rochelle and all the Ile de Ré and all those kind of places.
Biarritz. And...
Yeah. So Biarritz is right down the bottom. So that part of France is the Atlantic coast. So you've got these great long sandy beaches. You've got pine forests. You've got no hills. Perfect for cycling, right?
It's not a part of France I'm very familiar with in terms of cycling. The Loire Valley, I know from cycling along the Loire Valley, visiting the chateaus. Didn't get as far as the Atlantic coast, only as far as Tours from Paris. But the Atlantic coast, it's very built up in a lot of areas. It's got a lot of the not too charming holiday towns that you perhaps see in the hotter climates of Europe. It's where a lot of the French people go on their holidays, and it's not always particularly beautiful. Although once you do get down below Rochelle, again, you're starting to get into some regions with some great classic French architecture, classic French villages, beautiful natural parks. The regional park of the Landes is very beautiful.
Good, easy rolling country. This is where they had stages of the Tour de France that were kind of 450 kilometres in one stage, I think. You can make good progress. So you mentioned the Loire Valley, and that must be one of the primary destinations, particularly for someone who's not gone cycle touring before, because it's very well organised for people who are on bikes. You're pretty much off the road much of the time. You're on the towpath, you know, on the edge of the river, and there's a lot of accommodation available. It's obviously very flat because you are following the course of a river down. It's very popular.
It's incredibly popular for the reasons that you say, and it's very much a thing of touring in France, cycle touring in France. I think you mentioned accommodation there, and it is the availability of accommodation that, and the range of accommodation that's available, that makes cycle touring in France very attractive. You can have the very basic campsite. Most towns have a municipal campsite. You've got gîtes, you've got chambres d'hôtes, then you've got hotels of various standards, and the cheapest hotels are still very reasonably priced. The route along the Loire is, as you say, a very gentle route, lot of it off-road, or on very quiet country roads. And you've got the wonderful historic chateaus all the way along.
So you've got places to stop off and see things. So if you're traveling with someone who maybe cycling's not the main reason why they would go on holiday, even though it might be for you, you can find something interesting for them to do. So if you know, they, in a sense, not on a cycling holiday, they're on an eating and drinking and looking at historic buildings and art collections and gardens and lounging around. And if you set yourself a distance of 40 or 50 kilometers a day, it can be a cycling holiday without feeling like a cycling holiday.
I think you sum it up perfectly there, the fact that there is the opportunity to stop, look at something interesting every day within 30 to 40 miles. A novice cyclist, I would say that it's probably a very, very good place to start in cycle touring in France.
So let's go over the accommodation options that you mentioned there in terms of what it costs, because I think it's really incredible that the variety in France. And I certainly remember from a tour that I made in the Pyrenees and then up through the Auvergne a few years ago, that I had a sort of routine of camping wild for a couple of nights, which is not strictly legal, but it seems to be tolerated, particularly if you're on a bicycle. And if you make an effort to find out whose land it is and just ask, and they'll usually be very welcome. Once I had to share a field with some donkeys after I'd put my tarp up. And then the guy said, oh, yeah, you're welcome to stay here, but I'm just going to put these donkeys in with you. And so that was nice in the morning. So that's the free option, the wild camping. And then you can do the municipal camping, and that's like 4 or 5, maybe 8 euros in the more expensive places, but very, very good value. Four or five euros, and that will get you a nice big place to pitch your tent.
It'll give you a good size pitch, plus wash facilities. Lots of hot water, usually somewhere to wash your clothes as well. And sometimes they have a small shop on site as well so you can stock up on your provisions.
So comparing that to what you often find in Britain, which is a kind of farmer's field with a standpipe and a portaloo, and they're actually charging money for that, I find that the French option is just so much better.
I think it is very much better. I mean, I'm not sure if they're regulated, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are regulations that apply to both private campsites and municipal campsites in France, which require them to have certain facilities available to campers.
And so then up the scale a bit, you've got the private campsites, which are a bit more deluxe and maybe have a swimming pool and other things, and particularly good if you're with children who want to have, you know, playgrounds to run about on and that kind of what the French called animation. And those range upwards, that's sort of the 15 euro mark, really. And that kind of campsite is a bit more popular with the people who are caravanning, coming with a lot of gear and are wanting to basically stay for a couple of weeks in a sort of, it's not Butlins, but it's heading in that direction.
Yeah, it's the family who arrive in a car with a family-sized tent with interior rooms inside and bunk beds and proper camping stoves that have 4 gas burners. And it's not for the lightweight camper.
So you might feel a bit inadequate there in your one or two-man tent with your meths burner.
Yes, you might.
Okay. So then if you're not camping, you can get by, or if you are camping and you fancy a comfortable bed for the night instead of sleeping on the ground, then you've got the gîte and the chambre d'hôte. Chambre d'hôte is like bed and breakfast. And do you actually get a breakfast with that?
Generally you do, yeah. Yes. But it'd be something very basic. It'd be a croissant and a slice of cheese and a coffee.
Yeah. And so how much does that cost approximately?
The last time I looked, which was quite some time ago, I think it was about 15 to 20 euros for a chambre d'hôte. The gîtes are generally cheaper.
What's a gîte?
A gîte is very basic accommodation. It's a little bit like youth hostel accommodation, but it's privately owned. It'll generally be a two-room barn or building away from a private main house. So you're self-contained, self-catering. You might end up sharing the space with somebody you don't know. If it's a four-bedroom gîte, then the two other beds or three other beds might go to somebody else.
So this is what we might call a camping barn in the UK.
Yes.
Because they're springing up around the UK. But that's the gîte.
And with a gîte, there's no bedding provided. You're expected to bring your, generally expected to bring your own sleeping bag. And there is generally some cooking facility, or generally some cooking facilities on site, but not always.
Yeah. One of the things that makes camping or staying in these kind of self-catering gîtes much easier in France is the availability of pretty good quality food, and particularly food that is sort of almost fully prepared. I think it's is it a traiteur? It's not a butcher, but it's often connected to a butcher. But they make a lot of dishes that you can heat up.
I'd say a traiteur is somewhere between a boulangerie, the bakers, and the butchers. It's got prepared meals. Whether it's tarts, savoury tarts, or
some sort of stew.
Stew or a lasagna dish, which you can just heat up in a microwave or heat up on a... If you buy a stew, you can just heat up a stew on a camping stove very easily. And if you eat meat, I don't personally, but if you eat meat, you go into a supermarket, you will find jars full of various stews that can just be heated up, and the typical French cassoulet, which is a bean stew, which is very easy to heat up on a camping.
So a bit more tricky for the vegetarian doing this kind of grazing from the traiteur and the supermarché.
From the traiteur and the supermarché, yes. But then...
And in terms of getting something that you don't have to actually cook, that's what I'm getting at. It's because I found that I often would do this in the last 2 hours of my ride. I would look out for somewhere and I would buy supper essentially, and all I'd have to do is sort of tip it out into my pan on the fire and heat it up, and with a loaf of bread and a bottle of wine, that would be me.
It's certainly getting easier for vegetarians in France. Personally, when I've toured around France, I've tended to go buy a baguette, buy the cheese, buy fresh fruit, and that's been enough to satisfy me generally.
Right. Well, let's get back to the hotel options. You've got then above the gîte and the chambre d'hôte, you've got this sort of small, I guess they're the classic Lion d'Or hotel or whatever it is, Hotel de France, Hotel Bristol, the sort of provincial hotels.
Yes, you've got your very simple French one-star, two-star hotels, which I personally find very adequate. And if you want a good night's sleep on a budget, you want to have a decent shower, a bit of privacy, then nothing wrong with them at all.
And how much do they cost?
You're looking up to about, depending on the region, it'll be between 25 and 40 euros. So closer to Paris, you're going to be paying more. And depending on the time of year, time of the week as well, it'll vary.
I often looked out for the hotels that had a kind of Logis de France sign on them that I think they're part of some big network of small hotels that would offer food in a restaurant in the evening. And they also had to offer, it seemed to me, a certain menu, which is the Logis de France menu, which is like, I think, 20 euros or 25 euros for three or four courses. And the menu was supposed to offer a taste of the region that you were in. So it would focus on kind of regional specialities. Yeah. You wouldn't get an awful lot of choice. So with this, with a meal and breakfast and a night, you could usually do that as a demi-pension, half board, for 60 euros or something like that, which seemed to me to be a pretty good deal. And I would do that. I would tend to do that once a week. So I'd have my wild camping, and then I'd have a night or two at a municipal camping, so I could, you know, get things cleaned and stuff like that, and then to properly recharge my batteries, I'd go in and have one of these half board blowouts.
It's part of that whole range of the French hospitality industry, and sort of if you really want to go in style, there are chateau hotels, there are beautiful small boutique hotels which will provide wonderful gastronomic meals for you as well. You're looking at a much higher price, but there are cycle tours that base themselves around these going from one chateau hotel to another and having your bags carried for you. So it's a different kind of cycle touring.
And the local tourist offices are very good at providing a service for you to find some accommodation in the area. I found them to be really helpful, and they will, you know, make the bookings for you, perhaps even in the next place where you're going, which is really handy, particularly if you're not so confident speaking French. They will, not always, but they will often be able to speak English, and it's worth making use of their services, because that's what they're there for. And if you're polite and appreciative, they do a lot for you.
Yes, it's not just the tourist information centres. Most small towns, even villages, will have a mayor's office who would be able to direct you to places where you can stay in small villages. If you're not sure, if you arrive at the right time of day, the mayor's office will certainly know where that little out-of-the-way bed and breakfast, chambre d'hôte or gîte is that you can go and stay at.
So let's get back to the geography. We've got down to the south, to the Landes, and the Pyrenees is obviously a big draw. Lots of hills to climb up. Very beautiful scenery. I can highly recommend it.
I've cycled across the Pyrenees myself. Absolutely wonderful. As you say, okay, it's got big mountains, but fabulous, fabulous scenery. And in the summer, for a mountainous region, it can get very, very hot. It's challenging, but a wonderful area to cycle in.
And so north of the Pyrenees, because we shouldn't make this a coastal tour entirely, you've got these regions, the Dordogne, the Lot. They are the France profonde, deep France, I think they call it. And that's the sort of the back country. And it's very the Dordogne is very popular amongst British holidaymakers and expats, but it's still pretty nice, and you can get away from it all, can't you?
Yeah, yes, you've got the Tarn Valley, the Dordogne. I suppose one other thing we should mention whilst we're down in that southern corner is the Canal du Midi.
Oh, yes.
Which runs, I can't remember exactly where it runs from now.
It goes definitely goes through Narbonne, because I remember turning up in Narbonne after having done 170 kilometres coming down off the Pyrenees, and this was with all full camping gear, front and back panniers, and not finding a room in Narbonne, and it being at 9:30 at night, and actually having to spend the night in a ditch between the Canal du Midi and a vineyard on the other side of a hedgerow, and just being sure that I was going to wake up with my throat being slit by some brigand. But I got up very early and was on my way, and it was okay. So I definitely know that the Canal du Midi passes through Narbonne.
Yeah, I think it goes from Agde to Béziers to Narbonne, through to Toulouse, Carcassonne, Toulouse, that kind of route, yeah. And then over to the Atlantic coast.
It is popular, but to cycle on, because it's flat and off-road. But I found it a little bit monotonous. I mean, it is a canal. The water doesn't really move. It's not like going down the Loire. That doesn't feel beautiful. I used it because it was there and I thought I ought to see what it was all about. But I wouldn't have liked to have done a cycle tour that was based around the Canal du Midi.
Personally, I wouldn't either. But I think, again, thinking of people who are thinking of family holidays, or people who aren't particularly experienced cycle tourists, then I think it's an ideal, charming route to take. It's very picturesque.
I mean, there are some nice towns along the side. Yeah.
Yes, and it kind of encapsulates a lot of the feel, that kind of romantic feel of southern France.
Oh, maybe I'm being unfair. I do remember fantastic fruit, being sold basically just out of the fields around there, peaches and melons and that kind of stuff. And that was absolutely delicious. So then we head around. We've got the Rhone Valley and the Mediterranean coast. And that's actually not very nice for cycling, in my experience. Very built up, a lot of traffic.
I think you have to be more inland, sort of aiming towards towns like Orange and then Gap, going up towards Gap. So you cut off that bottom corner of Aix-en-Provence almost.
Yeah, I mean, around from north of Aix-en-Provence, it's actually quite nice. You've got the Luberon. And then you've obviously got Mont Ventoux, which for the athletic cyclist is a pilgrimage point. And that's not so bad. There's a lot of cycling going on around there, but it does get very hot in the day. But it's definitely doable. But then heading up towards the Alps, it's an area that I don't know so well.
Likewise, I've never cycled in the Alps. The pitches are there every year on the Tour de France. It looks absolutely wonderful. Great valleys, great roads, wide roads. I believe the roads aren't quite as steep as they are in the Pyrenees. Maybe the climate is a bit more changeable in the Alps than it is in the Pyrenees. But certainly on my list of regions of France to visit.
I mean, I did spend a couple of weeks there based around Bourg d'Oisans, which is at the foot of the Alpe d'Huez, and did a lot of the rides in that area, then a little bit of time in the Chartreuse, which was absolutely beautiful, the Chartreuse, and not many people there. I found the Alps a little bit overpopulated with tourists and a lot of traffic on the roads.
I think that is the downside of some of these areas in France, that the French all take their holidays at the same time and they tend to go to a lot of the same regions. And it's not only the French that are going there. As I said earlier, it's one of the most, or is the most visited country in the world. So
you will not be alone.
You will not be alone. But there are plenty of other places in France where you can go and find that peace and quiet that you perhaps desire.
So a little to the west of the Alps, you've got the Auvergne and the Massif Central, which is great cycling country and quite exhausting cycling country.
Very hard cycling country, and it is where you will find that isolation that we said you would perhaps not find in the Alps. Very mountainous, much more mountainous than you expect. Around Clermont-Ferrand, you've got the infamous Puy de Dôme, and then you have the wonderful volcanic Puy further south. Huge forests. Very, very rural, some very isolated communities in that area.
And a little bit down at heel economically.
I think it's the poorest region in France. It's a very rural farming area, and as farming has suffered, it's has suffered economically. The only big industry in that area is the Michelin tyre plant in Clermont-Ferrand, I believe.
And then north of the Auvergne and I guess northeast of the Auvergne, it's the big flatlands Allier, and I don't think it's not unpleasant to cycle around, and there's not too many people there, but it's not got a huge amount by way of attractions, has it?
Certainly going towards the northwest from Clermont-Ferrand, it's a little bit ordinary. Directly west of Clermont-Ferrand, you've got the Corrèze, I think, and that still has that very rural feel, very rolling. It's like the Massif Central, but slightly more rolling. But if you go to the northeast of Clermont-Ferrand, you're heading up towards Burgundy, and you can go through the Morvan National Park. It's probably the most historic region in France, Burgundy, Bourgogne. You have the parts of the Route Saint-Jacques, which pass through Bourgogne. Many, many old churches, many old towns. The Morvan itself, very rural, very isolated, a little bit like a smaller version of the Massif Central. And then you get into the rolling valleys further north of Champagne region.
When you drive through that on the autoroute, as I have done a few times, that's quite flat. Can you get away from that sort of flatness and the sort of infinite arable field?
Around Champagne, it is very rolling. There's the... if you were coming from Paris, it's quite a pleasant ride to cycle along the Marne Valley out towards Reims. Further west, down towards, over towards the German border, you have the Vosges.
And that's a mountain range, is it? Small mountain range?
A small mountain range. Quite challenging mountains. So, there, the Ballon d'Alsace, I think, was the first mountain they used in the Tour de France. I rode it many, many years ago, and it hurt my legs, definitely. But you've got small towns like Mulhouse and Colmar, very interesting in themselves. You've got Strasbourg, slightly further north, and then you're heading up towards Lorraine and up towards that part of France which becomes more industrial, but it's also home to a lot of the tragic war history of France. So you're passing through Verdun and Sedan.
That whole Western Front up to you know, pretty much almost where we started in our circling of the country is very upsetting, actually, when you're on the road cycling through these battlefield areas, because they mark on the road the point at which the Western Front was in, say, April 1915. And then you'll cycle 10 minutes along and that's where the Western Front was in February 1917. So in almost 2 years, the front has moved a trivial amount and an enormous number of people have lost their lives. And when you're cycling over this and it's just fields again with the occasional cemetery, it's a very strange, disquieting feeling. There's a lot of resonance.
I agree completely. It's hard not to feel emotionally moved by it. It's not just the visible sight of war cemeteries. I think it is something about the landscape itself. And I don't know whether you experience it in the same way in a car as you do on a bicycle, but certainly moving slowly through that landscape on a bicycle is a way of experiencing it.
Certainly a place that's worth visiting, if not necessarily an uplifting place.
To go back to that starting point we had, Calais, rather than going anti-clockwise, I would do as I did on my first cycle trip in France and head clockwise, heading down towards Lille. You can make a slight detour to Roubaix to pay homage to the Roubaix cycle track and the showers at the Roubaix cycle track. And then you can go down through Valenciennes and follow a little bit of the routes of Paris-Roubaix, go through those cobbled roads, and then you're back down heading towards Strasbourg and Colmar. I think for somebody who has experience on a bike and has a good level of fitness, it's not an easy route for the inexperienced, particularly when you're getting down towards the Vosges. I think that's quite challenging. But if you have a good level of fitness and it's the first time you've toured in France, have a week to tour, then it's certainly something that is possible to do.
Well, we ought not to forget the long distance cycle routes that are crisscrossing France and that are being given a boost under the recently announced cycling plan. Do you think that these would make a good basis for a cycle tour? It'd be quite easy, wouldn't it? You just say, well, we're just going to do, you know, route number 6, which takes us from X to Y, and all the navigation is pretty much sorted.
I think the problem with them is, perhaps, is the starting point and the stopping point, and then getting to your starting point and getting to from your stopping point, because they're basically designed to connect different parts of Europe. The Eurovelo routes will connect, say, Lisbon to Copenhagen. So they're not all completed. They're not fully complete. They're ambitious. It'd be great once they are done. But I think for somebody with a limited amount of time, they pose certain a few obstacles, I would say.
I mean, you can take your bike on the train in France. It's not as easy as it perhaps could be, but I think if you are prepared to go on the slightly slower trains and not insist on going on the high-speed train, then it's much easier. The slower trains seem to have more space on them for bikes than the high-speed trains, but you will have to book your bike onto a high-speed train, and you may even have to put it in a bag, which is always a hassle if you've been touring and you don't want to be carrying around a great big bike bag.
That's true. I think it's becoming easier in France. Certainly on local trains, it's easy to, usually straightforward, putting your bike on a local train. Then the intercity trains, certain times of the day, certain trains, they don't accept bikes, so you have to consult beforehand to find out whether your bike can go on a train or not.
But it is possible, but you may need to allow a little bit of time at the end of your journey before you head back. But generally, if you've got 24 hours to get back to your Channel port or to Paris to put the bike on the Eurostar, or Lille, in fact, to put the bike on the Eurostar, you can do that.
The Eurostar itself, I'm not sure what the rules are.
It's 30 pounds one way, and you don't have to book it, but it's not, they don't guarantee that it'll get on the train that you are on, but they will get it on the next train if they don't.
So you might have a little bit of wait.
You might have a bit of a wait at your destination. And let's just finally talk a little bit about what it's like actually on the roads in France. And by that I mean the emptiness of the roads, especially if you're on the back lanes, and the fact that the roads are really quite good quality. The surface is usually excellent. And then also just the general friendliness of people towards bicyclists.
Definitely true. You're given space on the roads. You're treated as though you deserve to be on the roads. You will certainly be welcomed in towns, and people will wish you bon courage, bon route. Sometimes, perhaps, if you're cycle touring, particularly if you're cycle touring alone and you encounter the more sporty types of cyclists, they might look at you a bit curiously and wonder what you're up to. But
there's a tradition in the public mind of going for a long journey on a bicycle, and it's regarded as something to be celebrated rather than you're a crank who doesn't have the money to go in a car. It's seen as a legitimate and noble thing to do. That's my experience.
There's an overwhelming goodwill towards the cyclist in France. And as you say, the person making the long journey is celebrated. The making the long journey on a bicycle is celebrated rather than derided or frowned upon.
Well, I was talking there with Kieran Yates, and to take us up to the hour, a little bit of French listening comprehension practice, courtesy of Jacqueline Taillebe. Thanks for listening. Until next week, goodbye.
Il est 7h du matin, faut se réveiller. Oh, je sommeille. Bon, alors, un peu de musique pour se mettre en train. Je sais pas moi, quelque chose comme Talking about my generation. Ouais, c'est pas tout à fait ça. Je trouve plus ma brosse à dents. Quelle passée celle-là encore. La bleue est à mon père. La rouge est à ma mère. La jaune est à mon frère. Vous avez pas vu ma brosse à dents? Tiens, on est lundi aujourd'hui. Ah, pour demain, j'ai un devoir d'anglais. J'aimerais bien avoir Paul McCartney pour m'aider. J'ai envie de mettre un 10 pour embêter les voisins qui roupillent toute la journée. Quelque chose comme un bon Elvis Presley. Oh, mais c'est vrai, celui-là, il en est resté. Oh, bah, bah, bah. Le dodo c'est terminé. Je suis presque prête et ça va beaucoup mieux. Je mets mon Shetland rouge ou bien mon Shetland bleu? Mon Shetland rouge? Mon Shetland bleu? Mon Shetland bleu? Mon Shetland rouge? Non, mon Shetland bleu. Mon Shetland rouge?